24. Seen in the night. Take you for a ride in my car car. Take you for a ride in my car car. Take you for a ride. Take you for a ride. Take you for a ride in my car car. Woody Guthrie. It was a dream. She was sure, almost until the very end, that it must be a dream. In the dream, she awoke from a dream of Arnie, making love to Arnie not in the car, but in a very cool blue room that was unfurnished, except for a deep blue shag rug and a scatter of throw pillows covered in a lighter blue satin. She awoke from this dream to her room in the small hours of Sunday morning. She could hear a car outside. She went to the window and looked out and down. Christine was standing at the curb. She was running. Lee could see exhaust raftering up from the straight pipes, but was empty. In the dream, she thought that Arnie must be at the door, although there was no knock as yet. She ought to go down, and quickly. If her father woke up and found Arnie here at 4 in the morning, he would be furious. But she didn't move. She looked down at the car and thought how much she hated it, and feared it, and it hated her, too. Rivals, she thought. And the thought in this dream was not grim and hotly jealous, but rather despairing and afraid. There it sat at the curb. There it was. There she was, parked outside her house in the dead trench of morning, waiting for her. Waiting for Lee. Come on down, honey. Come on. We'll cruise. And we'll talk about who needs him more, who cares for him more, and who will be better for him in the long run. Come on. You're not scared, are you? She was terrified. It's not fair. She's older. She knows the tricks. She'll beguile him. Get out, Lee whispered fiercely in the dream, and rapped softly on the glass with her knuckles. The glass felt cold to her touch. She could see the small crescent-shaped marks her knuckles left in the frost. It was amazing how real some dreams could be. But it had to be a dream. It had to be, because the car heard her. The words were no more than out of her mouth when the wipers suddenly started up, flicking wet snow off the windshield in somehow contemptuous swipes. And then it, or she, drew smoothly away from the curb and was gone up the street. With no one driving it. She was sure of that. As sure as one can be of anything in a dream. The passenger window had been dusted with snow, but was not opaque with it. She had been able to see inside. And there was no one behind the wheel. So, of course, it had to be a dream. She drifted back to her bed, into which she had never brought a lover. Like Arnie, she had never had a lover at all. Thinking of a Christmas quite long ago, 12, maybe even 14 years ago. Surely she could have been no more than 4 at the time. She and her mother had been in one of the big department stores in Boston, Filene's maybe. She put her head down on her pillow and fell asleep, in her dream, with her eyes open, looking at the faint gleam of early light in the window. And then, in dreams anything could happen, she saw the Filene's toy department on the other side of the window, tinsel, glitter, lights. They were looking for something for Bruce, Mother and Dad's only nephew. Somewhere a department store Santa Claus was ho-ho-hoing into a PA system, and the amplified sound was not jolly, but somehow ominous, the laughter of a maniac who had come in the night not with presents but with a meat cleaver. She had held out her hand toward one of the displays, had pointed, and told her mother that she wanted Santa Claus to bring her that. No, honey, Santa can't bring you that. That's a boy toy. But I want it. Santa will bring you a nice doll, maybe even a Barbie. Want that? Only boy elves make those, Lily, my love, for boys. The nice girl elves make nice dolls. I don't want a doll. I don't want a Barbie. I want that. If you're going to throw a tantrum, I'll have to take you home, Lee. I mean it now. So she had submitted, and Christmas had brought her not only Malibu Barbie, but also Malibu Ken, and she had enjoyed them, she supposed. But still she remembered the red Remco racing car on its green surface of painted hills, running without a cord along a painted road so perfect that there were even tiny metal guard rails, a road whose essential illusion was given away only by its pointless circularity. Ah, but it ran fast, that car. And was it bright red magic in her eye and her mind? It was. And the car's essential illusion was also magic. That illusion was somehow so captivating that it stole her heart. The illusion, of course, was that the car was driving itself. She knew that a store employee was really controlling it from a booth to the right, pushing buttons on a square wireless device. Her mother told her that was how it was happening, and so it must be so. But her eyes denied it. Her heart denied it. She stood fascinated, her small gloved hands on the rail of the display area, watching it race around and around, moving fast, driving itself, until her mother pulled her gently away. And over everything, seeming to cause the very tinsel strung along the ceiling to vibrate, the ominous laughter of the department store Santa. Lee slept more deeply, dreams and memories slowly fading, and outside, daylight came creeping in like cold milk, illuminating a street that was Sunday morning empty and Sunday morning silent. The season's first fall of snow was unmarred except for the tire tracks that swerved to the curb in front of the Cabot house and then moved smoothly away again toward the intersection at the end of this suburban block. She didn't rise until nearly 10 o'clock. Her mother, who didn't believe in slugabeds, finally called for her to come down and have breakfast before lunch, and by then the day had already warmed up to nearly 60 degrees. In western Pennsylvania, early November is apt to be every bit as capricious as early April, so by 10 o'clock the snow had melted and the tracks were gone.